Hello, everyone. Welcome to Proust Alive 23. I'm Matt Stoltz, and with me, as always, is the wonderful and talented Miklas Zusa.
Hi.
You may notice we've got a missing companion tonight. Joe will not be joining us. He is currently at the Ernst & Young Czech Entrepreneur of the Year Awards, where he is a nominee for Entrepreneur of the Year. So, he might check in with us. He might
not. Yeah, Joe said that, like,
we shall see.
The events overlap, but if he finds a minute, he said he will call from his phone or something. So we will see. Yeah. But yeah, let's just don't expect.
Yeah,
I guess,
yeah,
anything.
we're not holding our breath. Yeah. So, if we see Joe suddenly show up, shaking champagne all over the place, we'll know that.
Yeah,
it's good news. So, yeah. We've got a great show tonight. We have Sven Clockspring 3D with us.
Nice.
To talk about the torture toaster that I see all of you out there printing right now, and some of his other work. Yeah, so let's hop into the show. Mickey, what do you have for your Prusa Printer pick of the week this week?
Before I do that, I'm actually gonna check our eShop if something just...
Oh, yeah.
Game in stock.
I thought we were saving that for news, but okay.
Okay, not yet, but...
All right, we'll save it for news.
Yeah, something might...
Yeah. All right.
So
We'll give them a few more minutes.
Yeah,
so, yeah, what's your pick?
I have a, like, really simple, quick, small thing. It's a, like, cable hook thingy. Like, if you have a cable that's way too long, like I do have some cables... This just makes it kind of neat to...
Yeah, that's a MP Carlo, right? I think so.
Yes, MP Carlo audio cable clip. But to be fair, audio cable clip, if you maybe rescale it a little bit, it will fit USB cables, whatever long cable you just have hanging around. So yeah, just a quick little... Oh, it hit me in the face. I'm going to stop.
Yeah, that was on my list, and that's how I knew who made it. That was on my list.
Okay.
We almost had a matchup this week.
Nice.
My pick this week might be a slight bit controversial, but we shall see. It is the Elastic Eagle Mark II. This is a rubber band shooter.
that's good.
Yeah, that. It got stuck. Anyways, I don't have the right size rubber bands for it really, but you can put on multiple rubber bands and it will auto progress them as you fire them. And so with vaccines and more things coming out, I do feel that my neighbor Nick is in desperate need for a couple of rubber bands shooting his way.
The first shot was perfect at the camera. It looked super awesome.
So and that was from. EJTH, one of my motivations on this one is it is a print and place mechanism. So
the trigger
and everything all prints in place. There's no assembly required, which I thought was kind of cool, especially since that is one of the kind of claim to fame for our guests tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, still.
Okay, the big news at the eShop, satin sheets are coming in stock right now.
Like, in...
Any second. So we wanted to time it out so that you guys who are watching the show would be the first ones to find out that satin sheets are out there. So if you've been waiting to get your satin sheet, and we know from the comment section week after week that many of you guys are desperately in need of them.
Yeah.
The satin sheets are going to go live while we're on the show. So
both,
go to the eShop and keep your eyes peeled.
Both the Mark III size sheets and the mini.
Yeah. Nice. I thought it was just the Mark III ones. That's great that it's both.
Yeah, it should be like a couple of hundred from each. So not yet, but yeah, just so you know.
And any moment.
Yeah, DDoS attack on our eShop incoming. Yeah.
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 So fantastic. Okay, so in other news, you released a new video last week, I guess. You released a couple new videos last week. But very specifically, you released a new episode of the Prusa Printers developer log, showing some of the new features that are coming to Prusa Printers.
Yeah, when we did the first time, people really seemed to enjoy it, even though it's like, I understand it's for a very tight audience, like people who follow Prusa Printers quite closely, but those people seem to enjoy it. So I made another one, and the cool part is that all of the features shown in the video are now live. So we can actually try them right now. So the biggest one is without a doubt sorting in the market by popularity in time. So you can do most viewed, liked, downloaded, top rated in the past week, month, and the all-time sort. So this is something that I know, Matt, you wanted it really for a little.
Yeah, that's how I found the gun. Is it was actually in the like top rated in the, or you know, most liked or something in the past 7 days. It was in that list. So
yeah, I guess everyone wanted it. It just took a while to get right.
That's honestly not the easiest thing in the world to necessarily do, because you have to track.
Yeah.
Like most liked in the last 7 days, rather than just like looking at the likes, you actually have to track when the likes are happening, which, you know,
we
often requires a database change.
We checked like how other sites do, and one thing that's really confused me is some sites do like most liked in the 7 days only counts prints uploaded in the last 7 days, which I thought was just really.
Yeah.
Like it works kinda, but I find it strange, so. Yeah, we don't do it. We just, you know, all prints across the entire market. If it suddenly gets a lot of likes because, I don't know, it's featured in a video or whatever,
right,
it will pop up in the list. So, and it's nice that you can switch it on. Like most you can do most viewed in the past 30 days. You can get like quite interesting metrics. Of course, they are going to overlap quite a bit. Like,
oh yeah,
the most liked print will obviously also be viewed quite a lot. So yeah, there will be a significant overlap, but yeah, it's interesting nonetheless. Another really nice thing is, yeah, we can see right on the homepage the currently running contest, but now there's a whole new page for contests. On top is the currently running one, and below are all the finished contests. I think it's pretty nice. We can see the winners on the bottom. If we open it, we can see the winning designs, and then under it, just all of the submissions.
Right. Yeah, which is really great if you want to go back and look at those. That honestly is a feature that's super useful just for me, being able to kind of go through and look at the contests and things like that. So I'm very, very happy to see that.
I think Chet is saying that sheets are in stock. Maybe I have it cached or something. I don't know, but
they're saying that I'm seeing mini sheets.
Oh yeah, mini. Yeah. So the mini one is in stock.
Yeah, in stock.
So if you need the satin sheet for the mini, it is now stocked. Yeah. anyway, back to
Balu, not listening, buying sheets.
It would be nice if you came back to the stream afterwards, but like, I totally get it if you now want to hit F5. Okay, now I guess my colleague is writing to me that even the I'm gonna turn this off because that's awkward. But yeah.
Martin, stop.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, even the Mark III one is now in stock, so.
Fantastic.
If you need one, I guess go order one, and then we'll see you back on the stream afterwards. So what is also nice is that all of the winning designs now got these permanent badges, that those are visible everywhere in the market. So even if like you can see it here, you can see that it's an print awarded in a design organization tools. So I think that's nice. It's like the first.
Yeah, I'm gonna beg Andre for a Prusa Live badge so that our Prusa Live Picks of the Week can can get badges also.
Yeah. It's also pretty,
among some other things,
pretty handy if you, if I, do I see any competition friend? There were some on the top. If I,
there were some at the top. Yeah.
If I, if you click the badge, it will take you to the competition page. So that's, I think, quite handy because the collection, the contests are basically big collections of prints on the same topic. So yeah, if you like a cable organizer,
Yeah, if you see a cable organizer and it's not quite the cable organizer that you're after, looking within that competition might be a great way to find something that's more along the lines of what you're after. So I'm super excited about the badges and really hope that we continue kind of building upon those.
Yeah. Also, like speaking of, that's also another like really favorite way for me to discover prints is to find one that sort of fits, go into collections and go through other people's collections where that print is included, because most likely that collection also includes other things I'm interested in.
That benchy phone stand was in contention for my pick of the week also.
Cool.
So especially since we just got our pens, or well, you guys just got, I had it a little while ago, but we got our pens from Fernando, which is
DSK.
Fantastic. Yeah. They are so cool.
Lastly, we redone the filters. We had them, but before they were a little bit confusing. Like you could filter G codes and SLA print files at the same time, which I guess we just rethought that it's not intuitive. So now if you select a file type like a G code, then the filters in here make sense for G codes. And also they do this thing that most eShops do, which is to put the filters on top so that you can really easily see them and you can cancel them one by one or all at once, which is handy.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah. Also, one thing that I didn't mention in the developer log that I think just went live, and then let me try it off camera to see. So Prusa printers, let's go for like, self-watering planter or something. Oh yeah, cool. It works. We now have what is it called? Rich snippet. If you Google something and it's from Prusa printers, it will show you the ranking.
Oh, that's really great.
That's I think it's just a cool little thing. It shows you the ranking of the print, which other sites don't do.
So. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
And you had another video, and we had a blog post and things to go along with it. So on April 1st, we announced our latest and greatest printer to add to our lineup. The Prusa Mendel I2S.
Dumb.
Or something along that line.
It was we just made it the Mendel I2 existed for like over what 11 12 years or 10 years or something. We just added the S, like it's
we needed like a plus and an ampersand or something.
Actually, speaking of, let me just grab a cool little printer that is very much on the topic. It's like quite a rare relic.
Yeah.
This is Joe's. This is the Prusa Mendel. I mean, like the one. This is the Prusa Mendel that Joe used, and it's still here in the office. It was always moved, and it was one of the inspirations for April Fools to go kind of a little bit back to the roots. But I just think it's. It's just cool that it's still here, the original machine.
I had been at a makerspace at one point that had been given a original Mendel, and it wasn't in working condition, and it was a total mess. And I actually printed all the Prusa simplified Mendel parts and rebuilt that Mendel kind of from scratch using the Prusa simplified parts well before I ever knew Joe.
Cool. Yeah, so just in case you missed it, it's on our it's on the blog on Prusa Printers, but yeah, it was just a little April Fool's joke that we played on you. And I was so happy when I saw some the comments on under the YouTube video, like people thought it's real to like the 40-50 second mark, and then
yeah,
when it started to get ridiculous, they realized.
Yes. And you know, on top of that, to make it all the more fun, the crazy talented Neil 3D Prints banged out a Prusa Mate.
Yeah, it looks fantastic.
Of it in like absolutely no time. Just absolute legend to be able to make that quickly.
Yeah, and it's such a fun model. I love how it's derpy. It's a little bit derpy because it's Mendel.
No, yeah, it's... I totally have to print that. And I love that like all of its parts are like out of skew, because of course they are. It's a it's a Mendel. Very cool.
Those are the news and the recap of what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's bring Sven in.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Hopefully his coffee is ready.
So let's see if the sheets are still in stock. They are. Okay.
There he is.
Hello.
Hi.
Howdy, Sven. So we are joined with Sven. You guys probably know him as Clockspring 3D. And he is the creator of lots of really cool and interesting mechanical like print and place models. And recently released the Torture Toaster. Which again, a lot of you guys are out there printing in mass, a great little, tester model to see how well your machine is tuned in, and, probably a great way to tell how well it will also print some of your other models, I assume too. And
oh, well, to a degree, but I actually had to dial back some of the stuff that I normally do to make things printable, to make this more of a torture test, because ordinarily I would not have all of it. How bright is that? I would not have all of these individual parts on the bottom that just fall off the bed while you're trying to print it and things like that. So in fact, that was probably the trickiest part of designing that thing, was just realizing all of the things that I do just naturally to make things more printable and not do those. So torture is a good word for it, mostly because it falls off the bed and it's just again.
Yes. One of the things I really love about your designs is, you know, you'll take something as simple as like a box or a vase, and you'll add some kind of crazy like mechanism onto it that's just, you know, kind of borders on the level of absurd, but like makes it so interesting and unique, and like makes you say, I want to print that because that's so cool. Like, what are your inspirations, and how do you kind of come up with those ideas of like, how, you know, how you're going to make these things?
Well, I mean, ideas are always the hardest part of everything. I always describe the process of, you know, half the time is taking up coming up with ideas, and then, you know, maybe half the remaining time is solving the design problems, and the rest is actually doing it, you know. And the ideas is always the bit that's the one that takes up most of the time. And just doing things generates ideas, I find, you know. Even if, you know, I don't have anything specific in mind, I'll just, you know, play with the shape, or I think, oh, could I make something where there's a screw mechanism that could like close things from the bottom to the top without, you know, with a hinge or something. Here's an example. You know, it's just like, could I make something that has a, you know, a screw mechanism that has a hinged lid as well? And it's just, you know, exploring how you could approach these sorts of concepts, and sometimes it leads you in a completely different direction. And that's the good thing about when you're just approaching this stuff as a creative exercise, is it doesn't really matter where you end up, because you're not necessarily solving a problem beyond just trying to be interesting and do new things and find things that are interesting and satisfying. So yeah, as for where I get ideas, I just do stuff the time.
Your prints are usually
unexpected.
It's just usually turn out like a really unexpected way. You see the shape and are like, that looks interesting. And then you show it in action. It's like, okay, this thing bends and just, you know, goes outward. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of my stuff is just an excuse to like put some crazy mechanism in, or just to work with a shape or something like that. So yes, it's a box, but it's really there because I wanted to make a, you know, a seven-sided figure that did this or had this thickness to it or had a knurled outside or whatever. So a lot of the stuff that I do is just an excuse to play with some little aspect, but it needs a form to carry that as well.
Yeah. You had mentioned that with the torture toaster, you kind of had to roll back some of your things that you do to, you know, tricks to make things more printable. Do you have any major tricks that you would like to share with our audience of like those kind of things that if they wanted to get into print and place mechanisms and things like that, like are like your go-tos?
Well, the number one is testing. So there's so many things that will work on paper and work conceptually that just when it comes to actually dealing with printed plastic parts won't work. So especially things like friction, long axle type things driven from one end will just bind as things tilt sideways. So stuff like that, you only find out when you actually print the thing and test it and then try to work out what's going wrong and so on. But in terms of just easy wins, things like putting bevels on the bottom of components that are close together so that, yes, they'll be close together further up, but if you've got, say, a little bit of elephant pudding on your first layers, it's not going to kill the print and bind everything together. So just making sure that things, you know, aren't too close together on the bed itself makes a huge difference to the printability. So I test things on not just, you know, precise printers, but also just run-of-the-mill cheap printers with no tuning, standard slicing, and so on. And so I try to get these sorts of problems. And then it's like, right, how do we do a design around that? But, you know, a lot of the stuff is really just a matter of just saying, you know, do I have a consistent tolerance? You know, are there any points here where things are just a bit too close together? And generally speaking, you know, printers are just so good these days that as long as you have, you know, a reasonable gap, that things just kind of work. I was just watching that video there with things falling everywhere. One of the things that often gets me is, you know, you design for these sorts of gaps and you have these tolerances, but if you have a few of them, then you start to get, you know, play in the models, and then you might get components that can, hey, it's my cat. You might get components that can come apart from each other that aren't supposed to because of the fact that these tolerances add up. And those are the sorts of things that you only see when you test it. And you test it on not just the cheap printers, but the precise ones as well that, you know, that are giving you the exact, you know, replication of the tolerances that you designed in. And suddenly, you know, you've got a millimeter of movement and your teeth are, you know, a millimeter long and something they can disengage. And so, yeah, testing is everything in these things. And apart from anything else, you need to know how well these things work and whether it's actually, you know, satisfying to hold and use. So many of my, you know, iterations around me looking at something and thinking, oh, but if that corner was just like, you know, shampooed off, it would look so much cooler. And it's 3D printing, so it's easy to do that and do another iteration and you know, and keep going until you are happy. Because it's, I mean, it's easy to take it for granted, but it's just, it's so great that we can just keep going until, you know, things are right, because the turnaround is so quick, even for a long print. I mean, what's a long print? A day, 2 days is huge. But in the scheme of things, you know, that it's unimaginably quick compared to, you know, any other process of creating these things.
Do you sometimes print just a section of the model which you are trying to perfect, maybe to get the tolerance?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
It depends what I'm doing. If it's something that's a new mechanism that I'm not entirely sure about, then absolutely. I'd rather do that than, you know, do iterations of an hour than a day if I can speed things up. But a lot of the time, like that one that we're looking at now, all the problems that were involved in that only came up when I printed the whole thing. So I just had all these giant long prints because the issues were all around printability of tall, skinny things with teeth on them and trying to make that as reliable as possible, which is still, it's still a bit tricky. Bed adhesion, as always, is a killer on that one, because look at that, those tiny little contact areas for something that's so long and thin. So, you know, a lot of the work went into that in just making those contact areas as big as they could be without, you know, compromising the overall design. And those are the sorts of problems that do require you to print the whole thing in order to really, you know, understand what the problems are.
This one is cool. Yeah, I like this one. Little usability. Heck.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It was funny how many people commented that, you know, but now you got to wash your elbow. And it's like, look, this is meant for people who can't use their hands.
Right.
This is an accessibility tool. This is something built for a need. See, that's something I actually made that was for a specific purpose that, you know, solved the problem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I occasionally do that. you were asking earlier about tools, and just seeing that bars there reminded me that this one here, one of my favorite tools is OpenSCAD, and just being able to change things parametrically as I go and resolve things that way. So it's okay, you know, so I've got a problem with, you know, two bits of geometry that aren't meeting quite right, and I can tweak it precisely using in those sorts of things. But sorry, you probably had more questions. I should just stop.
No. This is great. So are you using OpenSCAD a lot of your modeling?
My question as well.
Look, I love OpenSCAD, and I've got a series of boxes that I built up parametrically in OpenSCAD, which are it's fantastic because I can just change, you know, my internal dimensions and, you know, instantly get, you know, new designs. Most of what I do though is Fusion 360, which also would work parametrically. The problem is that a lot of the stuff I do isn't necessarily planned out from the start. It's an evolution, which is, you know, any creative process is going to end up that way, as opposed to a purely engineering solution. So for something like those boxes, I already knew how I was going to solve all the problems, what it was going to look like, and I could build it up from scratch and do it sensibly in a way that would lend itself to being, you know, rescaled and so on. A lot of the stuff I do is not built the way you would do it if you were planning it from the start. So I'll do stuff in Fusion and it'll be great and be precise, but the way that I've built it up is completely, you know, contrary to what you would do if you wanted to be able to just say change the tolerance later, because I've built this thing and I've chopped bits out and I've cut other bits and stuck them together and rescaled and done all these things that make it completely impractical to just, you know, adjust one little thing back in the timeline. But yeah, mostly I work with Fusion these days. I'll always have a soft spot for Tinkercad. It's always my go-to when somebody wants to start somewhere, and it's so easy and streamlined and straightforward. And I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Fusion, OpenSCAD. I also do a lot in Illustrator. So for example, things like this, which is, sorry, excuse the brightness on that, which is this Nautiloid gears. And it's easy enough to get these sorts of profiles, but not necessarily in a form that's printable. Because that's the other thing. When working with printable gears, the profiles that you would get out of most gear generators are not generally directly printable. Maybe if you assemble them separately, but if you're dealing with print in place, you need to build in these tolerances. So you've got to kind of, you know, back off the profiles a bit, so on. And I'll often do that in Illustrator and get those things where I need them to be before I pull them into Fusion or whatever I'm using. So in terms of tools, there's so many useful ones out there. TopMod is just this random, you know, topology modeling thing that, you know, you do have to save your work every 30 seconds for when it crashes. But, you know, all of these little bits and pieces that you can draw together and import from one and so on are just so great for even just building inspiration. So, you know, working in one tool that lets you just look at a design in a particular way can, you know, generate ideas that you just don't get when you're working with things in another tool.
Yeah. What is
that,
the last
that
one?
That geared green box that you had was actually the very first of your models that I printed.
I really have a soft spot for this just because I love mechanisms where one bit of motion drives another bit of motion at a different rate. And sorry, I apologize for the brightness on this. And this one, so as this moves, this one down here moves at a different, at a variable speed because of those that gear ratio changes over it. And, you know, I'm just going to keep doing this. Half of my designs are just me just going, oh, this is, I want to make something that moves like this.
What was the last software that you mentioned, the one that you said crashes quite often?
TopMod. I think it was someone's university project or something. It's
okay.
It gets mentioned now and again, and it's a topology modeling thing for just working with geometric figures. And
okay.
Yeah, it's cool, and I love it, but it's very purpose specific. And I came across it because I'd seen other people do just some really cool rendered stuff. And it's like, how can I use this in printing?
even
open. And I'm sure there's, you know, any number of other tools out there that, you know, are not meant for 3D printing that, you know, are just as useful for that. But I don't think I have any examples here of things I've done with that. I only use it occasionally, and it's more likely that I'll play around in that and go, wow, I've done this cool dodecahedral thing, and then I'll just go rebuild it in Fusion. But, you know, the ideas came from working in this other tool. And as I said, you know, ideas are always the the hardest part. So, yeah, doing things in... So Fusion is my go-to. So I have my particular workflow, and I know how I'm going to, you know, approach getting things, you know, constructed that way, but it's not always the best for just exploring ideas. And sometimes pen and paper is
like, you know, say you have best. To kind of already have it sort of thought out what you want to do, and even the dimensions, because I find Fusion, if you change things too much, it just sort of breaks apart, things get reference to wrong things, and it just flips inside out, and you just have to start over. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And you realize that you can't change something. And so you end up like, well, if I cut this in half and I just mirror that, but now I've wrecked the threads. And So there is a lot. And then, of course, you know, you've done this irreparable damage to your history. Yeah, and you may as well have just exported an STL and brought it back in. But, you know,
you make all the issues. The smallest change in the first sketch. You click OK and you just watch in horror as it gets propagated through the whole timeline and just breaks terribly.
Oh, totally. I can relate to that very strongly. Yeah. It really is just kind of cross your fingers and hope with those sorts of changes. Yeah. And then, you know, even when it does work and it looks like it's done what you expected, it's like, I don't trust this. I'm going to have to start looking around for problems, you know.
Yeah.
Is there something gone wrong? Yeah, which is totally fair. You know, it's a wonderful tool, but when you're abusing it that way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very cool. So other than software tools, do you use any other tools in your design process? This is something that I often ask our designers who come in. So, you know, some people like Space Mice, or, you know, have a special keyboard set up for things. Like, is there anything that's like part of your go-to, you know, design tool set?
Pen and paper, which sometimes might be tablet and stylus, but just sketching things out is a great way to just get things out of your head. And sometimes it's like, you know, explaining something to someone, and it forces you to articulate things. When you put things down on paper and you have to actually commit to some lines and some shapes, it starts to reveal the shortcomings in the, you know, what is in your head, and forces you to think about, you know, how things are actually going to work together. So I wouldn't say that I have any like software tools or hardware tools that affect that. It's more just that process of actually refining an idea to the point where, you know, you could explain it to someone else or show a bit of paper to somebody else. It is really a key thing for me.
And I kind of love that, because it's sometimes people get caught up in thinking if there's a barrier to entry, like, oh, you know, this person is so good at designing because, you know, they bought the expensive Space Mouse, and like, I'm not good at designing because I don't have this piece of hardware. And it's like, no, like, it's about the time that you commit into it and learning, and you know, your go-to tool is one of the most accessible tools out there, right? Yeah. Like a piece of paper and a pen, right? Just being able to sketch out and ideas.
Absolutely. I mean, the barrier to entry is just so low. It's wonderful. And it really is a case where you can fire up Tinkercad and do like most of the designs that we're seeing here. I say Tinkercad just because the barrier to entry there in terms of learning is just so low. And and then like all of the things we're looking at now, okay, that's a bad example. That one would be a bit tricky.
I mean, you could do
Fusion is probably a bit easier to work with in this one. When you start dealing with moving parts and want to make sure you maintain separate components and things, but for most of these things, all you really need to get started is just an idea, and you know, fire up your free software tool. I mean, Fusion is still free for hobbyist use. It's amazing because it's just such a refined, powerful tool, and then a 3D printer. it's just the it still amazes me that it's all just so easy to do.
Yeah, yes, for sure. You had mentioned that, you know, one of your processes is, you know, printing out and running test prints. How many printers are you up to running test prints at this point?
Look, it varies. And I did recently, it's funny, I got rid of all of my older, big, expensive printers from, you know, 2017 or so, because compared to today's less expensive printers, they just, you know, they didn't cut it. Right. And the maintenance was just horrendous on them. So I'm currently running 7-8 printers, 4 of which are Prusas. I just added 2 more minis, which I love, because relatively small footprint, relatively low power consumption, which when you're running things off a domestic power circuit is, you know, starts to become important after a while. So those just kind of run most of the time. I'm not in my usual space that I would be talking from, because there were printers running in that space, and I didn't realize that the prints would take quite as long as they are.
Do they get their own room with that many printers?
It is a bit like that. Yeah. I did just add some more shelves to neaten things up and give my printing areas some more space. But it literally is, you know, printers on the walls. Because it's not just the printers either. It's, you know, you need room to put your spools and, oh God, filament storage.
Yeah.
Like I go through a lot of filament, you know, test printing does, you tend to run through these things, and then finding somewhere to put these things, not just to store them, but so that you know what you've got, so that you don't run out of that thing that you needed is, I mean, it's totally first world problems, but yeah, it's funny. I was having a conversation recently with someone about who was deliberating, you know, Mini versus Mark IIIs. And for me, it was like Mini, just because it's compact, it fits. I can put 3 of them on a shelf.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
right.
And
one of the things that we say to people is, you know, they're like, oh, I want more space. I want more space. Is, you know, if you look through a site like Prusa Printers, like 90% of the objects that are uploaded to it will print on a Mini. You know, it's not that many.
No, but it's funny how I put, I don't have one here, but that battery box thing I did recently, the original one was about 186 mil long, I think, the footprint on it. And immediate questions were, will this print on a Mini? So I refactored it slightly so that it would fit on that 180 mil nice dimension, because that's kind of it's almost like a new default.
Right.
And for me, that's very easy. That makes life easier, because, you know, I test print a lot of stuff on the Minis. But
right. And 180 we've looked mil, at, go ahead.
I was just going to say 180 mil is, it's very different to, remember the old like 150 mil square printers that were kind of around a few years ago? And they were tiny. You know, that seemed very limiting, but 180 is a very different proposition.
Yeah. So we've shown a lot of different prints here, and you've talked about a lot of different prints. You've created a ton of designs. Do you have like a number out there of how many prints you've actually released?
I have no idea, and I forget sometimes what I've actually published out there versus what I've actually made and ended up just sitting on a shelf or in a box because I wasn't quite happy with it, or because I just forgot. I seriously have prints that I just thought, oh, I'll have to publish that one day. And then I found one a year later recently and went, oh, did I never put that up? But, you know, hundreds and hundreds.
This is certainly, like the stories that you hear about, like really like great musicians and things like that. Like when Prince died, they're like, yeah, we could like continue releasing album and album of album of stuff that he's already recorded, but just never released. And yeah, so at some point, someone's gonna like go through your Fusion 360 account and just start pushing out all kinds of STL files.
I've got so many abandoned things in Fusion there, because I'll sometimes just explore ideas that end up as dead end, or hopefully that it'll be a dead end, but it'll be a starting point for something different. So I'll be progressing through it and realize that I really like some aspect of it, and so I'll do something completely different that just works from that aspect and from, you know, whatever it is that I've just suddenly become fixated on instead.
Yeah,
so that just leaves this sort of wake of abandoned designs and prints, which occasionally I'll show somebody, you know, something, and they'll like it, and that'll, you know, spark my interest again. Yeah. And I'll unabandon things, or I'll just rethink, you know, why I abandoned it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Nice. Well, so we're looking at the torture toaster here, and the torture toaster is available on Prusa Printers. So for all of you interested in dipping your toes into the crazy world of Clock Spring and his models, you can definitely go get the torture toaster on Prusa Printers. Hopefully, maybe in the future we'll see some less torturous models on there as well. But where, if users want to, can they get like the majority of your files?
My mini factory has all of my historical stuff, and Patreon has all of my stuff. The stuff that's on my mini factory is paid stuff, is available to patrons. Like the whole back catalog is available to my Patreon supporters. So I try to make that a win-win thing. And you know, so it's just, you know, if you're a member, you get everything. So yeah. I think of it more as, you know, it's a supporting thing rather than a selling thing.
Yeah.
So because it makes a huge difference. The support, not just the financial support, but just that community around things is just such an inspiring thing. Because in terms of ideas, that's the other thing, you know, putting something out and having people say, oh, but what about, you know, is great. And it's not just ideas, it's just the enthusiasm, you know, the enthusiasm feeds me in return. It's just like, yeah, let's do this.
Right.
Like, yeah. What if you put more gears in?
I'm a backer on your Patreon.
You are.
And it's, yeah, and I appreciate it. It's one of those great things of, you know, if I need something to kind of like invigorate like my desire for 3D printing, it's a great place to go and grab a model that is super exciting and you know, it's fun to print. So
there are also some Patreons in the chat.
Yeah, I appreciate that you keep on releasing as much as you do. On the other hand, I'm always like, I can't just constantly be printing out Clock Spring prints, because I would just run out of room.
I know, and that's the other thing, you know, with Patreon, yeah, it's a commitment, it's a two-way street, and so it definitely drives me to make sure I keep my momentum up, which is a positive thing, because it's really easy to, I mean, motivation is a tough thing sometimes,
yeah.
And having that sort of that obligation, call it pressure, it's a good pressure, having that thing to drive you is really useful sometimes. You're like, no, I must just get this finished. I'll solve this problem. I'll work out what's going wrong with this. And that's a great aspect of it too. I mean, I guess the community aspect to 3D printing in general is just huge. I mean, I would never have got into, you know, designing if it wasn't for, you know, the immediate feedback that people give you. And it's, you know, this oddly enough, you know, not that many egos floating around. It's just this supportive community of people who just want to help everyone else.
Yeah.
And
this community really is great. And it's one of the reasons why we've been doing this show for a year plus now, you know, because we want to continue interacting with the community, even in these tough times that, you know, we don't see everyone face to face. So it's been really great to have you on the show. That was really amazing. We would normally kind of say goodbye at this point, but since we don't have Joe, why don't you stick around for the end of the show and hang out while we talk about our Prusa Printers picks of the, or no, sorry, our Prusa Live Show Us Your Prints winners for this week. And then maybe take some questions from the audience after we're done there. So, all right. This is our weekly contest, or not weekly contest, but our every show contest. I always screw up.
Yeah, every time.
Shows
I get
two
it.
Weeks.
Totally get it.
This is our bi-weekly contest, where we find some of the amazing prints that you guys have printed and tag Prusa Live on Twitter and give you guys some filament for the amazing prints out there. So who's our third place this week, Nicky?
I switched it up a little bit, and I will go through some honorable mentions before we get to the third place,
cool.
Because we got some really nice submissions this time.
Yeah, there were some really great submissions.
And yeah, it's always, I always feel bad when we don't give everyone some. I would, you know, if we had 20 prizes, I would find winners for them. But
yeah, for sure.
You just have to pick a few. So, Alan Zofer.
Yeah, I don't envy you trying to pick
all
these things.
It's hard.
with this. Awesome. This model was one of the winners from the last show, if I remember correctly.
It was. It was our winner for the last show, That is an MMU version of it, which is really cool.
Yeah. Then we have a 3D noob with this coral, which is also interesting.
I loved this print.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved this print.
Super
like
cool.
That blue, it feels like maybe it's our royal blue, but maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah, it looks
that blue just looks so great. And like, it really does feel like a coral reef.
This one is super cute. It's
that is cute.
It's adorable.
Harold's design, so he both designed it and printed it. And it's just
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's an honorable mention. This one for sure is a friend of the poster made a drawing, and basically this guy turned the drawing into a color change print, and I think it looks pretty dope.
That is cool.
Yeah. So those are some of the honorable mentions. And oh, Matt, remember how you say that Google always decides to sign you out every 2 weeks, and it always happens exactly when we are on the show. Just sign me in front of my eyes. anyway, and also just before we actually invited Sven, we were showing the satin sheets, and it seems like the chat managed to take the its shop is back. It was down for a little bit from everyone refreshing and trying to get the sheet. But I'm just checking, and it looks like shop is back up, and the sheets are still in stock, to my surprise. So those that missed it can still get it.
Yeah. All right. So who's our third place this week, Mickey?
So the third place goes to Jason at Offbeat Printing. No! Oh my God! I'm screwing it up. That's not the one. We made some last minute changes, and I haven't updated it. So that was 1 second, another honorable mention. The third place goes to our well-known friend Bart with his ridiculous MMU print that took like 6 days or like 52 hours in.
That needs another 55 hours to complete. That was already well into it. Yeah, it was over 6 days of printing.
And if we go to Bart's profile, I think we can quickly find the finished print, which is ridiculous.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
So many color changes. It's crazy.
Yeah. He had a list in there. It was over 2,000 swaps.
Yeah.
In the, overall making of it, which is super cool.
Great job, Art. That's
yes.
One of the
and what was Jason's print that you were mentioning there? There was a little mix up there. What's Jason's print? I think it was Jason.
Was it Jason? Oh yeah, that was the very cute planter. This one.
Yeah.
It's also pretty. I like that we always like when the print is still on the bed, that you can see it untouched as it was printed, and the plant is planted in the planter while it's still literally attached to the sheet, which I think is pretty funny.
Well, Jason, if you're watching, I feel bad if you got a little excited thinking that you were third place. So we're going to split third place on this one, and I will make sure we get a prize off to Jason.
Oh,
also,
cool.
Just cut the spool in half.
I think we can manage to send out an extra spool.
Okay. And so now we go to the second place, which is Ben C. And this Easter themed. Oh, it's so pretty. These eggs. It's just so cute.
Yeah, this one was fun just because of the sheer number of different things that you printed. And the brown ones really look like they're chocolate. Like it looks like it looks like those could have just come right off of Evan's printer from the last show,
true.
Of the cocoa press.
Yeah.
And ready to eat.
I do love that gold. What is that gold from?
I think
No, it has some glitter. It's not our gold.
It's not ours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the colors are very nice. Lovely. And that moves us to the third place. The first place.
Yes.
And that's by Adi Nistor. And look at this.
Wow.
It's
that doesn't even look printed. Look at that.
Yeah, and it's printed on the Mini, clearly.
Yeah.
With multiple parts, even though it looks like it was printed in place. And yeah, it's just so
it's a bit gruesome in parts though.
Yeah, it's just so clean. It's,
yeah, he kind of does look a little a little disturbing just seeing the pile of parts there.
I guess.
Yeah,
that is just
and actually looking at this, I was looking at the artist who created this, and it, especially if you're into retro cartoons. The designs that Red Dad Steve has made are just phenomenal.
Steve does amazing stuff.
Yeah, so
he did that Cheshire Cat one.
Yeah,
was the multi-material one of them, but just fantastic.
Yeah.
Steve, if you're watching, I would love to have you on the show. So I will be trying to get in contact with you and see if we can. We can get you on a future episode because I love your work.
Ah, even the instructions, it's so well done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are very nice. Anyway, those are the winners of our this show's competition. Well done, everyone.
Yeah. Congratulations to everyone. We really appreciate everyone sending in their entries and seeing what you guys are making.
We have the winner at Inistore in the chat, and I suspect we probably have the other winners. At least some of them in the chat as well.
I'm pretty sure I saw 3D Noob early on in the chat. I'm not sure if he's still around, but I know early on at the beginning of the show I saw him in there.
Okay.
So yeah, wonderful. We have about
10 minutes.
Minutes or so to take some questions. So if any of you guys have questions, please hit us up. Let me see.
Yeah.
I had some stuff from. Oh yeah, there's a bunch of stuff coming in on on Discord now.
So I see one that's about adhesion of TPU to the texture sheet, and it's adhesing too much. We have a thing. It's called Material Table Prusa. I'm gonna Google it because that's the fastest way for me to find it. And it's this super cool table. If you just type into Google Material Table Prusa, it's the first result. And yes, I
never knew that existed.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's not that old. It's quite recent and we keep updating it. And yeah, if I move this zoomy thingy away, it even has like some material properties like heat deflection and tensile strength and stuff like that, which is quite handy. Now we can see it all. Impact resistance, tensile strength. But also for the free sheets that we have, if you need to apply some glue stick or whatever, it's shown in this table, which is quite handy. But yeah, for TPU, so let's see, flex, smooth, definitely with glue stick. Yeah, I agree. Like on powder coated sheet, you shouldn't need anything. So the one thing that you really shouldn't do with flexibles is if you put your live Z way too low, it will imprint in the texture sheet, and then it might be a pain to remove, and it might even remove some of the texture. So I would be careful about that.
Yeah, I will say my very first Mark II with the sticker sheet, the smooth PEI sticker sheet. I learned the hard way that glue stick is definitely needed when printing TPUs.
Oh, for sure.
By ripping a chunk straight out of it.
It bonds just perfectly to it.
Yeah. Even on the textured sheets, I still put down glue stick and it prints great.
You just,
with glue stick.
You
down,
just
so.
Really, like, you can have your live Z quite high and it will still stick perfectly because it just adheres to PEI so well. It's crazy.
Yeah. So for safety's sake, I definitely say Yeah, use the glue stick. On the topic of sheets, Alan Zofer, who often is an entry to our contest, he is asking in Discord if there's any plans to release a Mark III spring steel sheet with no finish to it, with no, you know, PEI or anything like that. And I don't know if that's a plan right now, but it's definitely something I think would be interesting.
I can think of one danger, and that is if someone applied a coating just on one side, and then you would, if you put just the spring steel sheet on your bed, you will eventually scratch it. You will damage the copper, the individual lines, and you will short it out a little bit, which is one of the reasons why all our sheets are double-sided. Is one, you get two sides, so that's obviously quite handy, but it has a double function, and that is that the metal is not touching the bed directly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Have to be safe on.
But I don't know. I don't know about if we'll do it. Haven't heard about any plans for that.
Yeah. I would love to see a Garolite sheet for nylon, and so having the option there would be cool. Let's see.
I'm just interested in this satin sheet. See, I wasn't on the call earlier, so I knew nothing until you mentioned it.
I actually just printed this your toaster on a satin sheet. So it's basically something in between. The smooth one has the sticker on it, and the textured one has it's powder coated. So this satin one is also powder coated, but it's like matte smooth. It doesn't have the texture, but there's no glue between the PEI. It's also powder coated. So,
well, I use the texture sheet exclusively. I've got all my minis still have the smooth sheets in the bubble wrap because I've never taken them out.
But it can be
so
tricky.
So the satin sounds good.
But the texture one can be tricky for PLA, right? Because like small things, like it depends. But yeah. I mean, if you printed the toaster with PLA on the texture sheet, that's pretty impressive.
That's the only way that I did it.
Okay,
and,
cool.
I had quite a, and you just watch it and just hope, and it's a bit 50-50 with some of those tiny little parts.
I like to joke that the satin sheet is the one sheet to rule them all. It's the combo between the two, that if you only had one sheet, the satin sheet's probably the sheet for you. But
and is that available
having
for
the option between all of them is great.
Is that available for both the Mark III S and the Mini?
It is, but the it's kind of limited the amount we have. So that's why the chat just stormed our eShop and kind of smashed the order button to try to get the few that we restock every time.
Yeah, we released them around Black Friday, and they sold out pretty well instantly, and there has been a big demand since November, you know, for them. So
right. Presumably they can be back ordered then.
Z&E Productions, Joe is at an award ceremony. Scroll back to the beginning, although I see Blue is answering right there. Scroll back to the beginning after the show, and we will tell you exactly where Joe is. Let's see.
There was a question about the technicians Prusa technicians that we announced sneakily, like in a blog post. So that is still happening. We are working on everything that needs to be done on our side, like technical wise, and also all the materials for the future technicians.
Right.
So, but it's progressing pretty well.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, there's a lot there so that we can make sure that whoever is a Prusa certified technician really is going to be, capable and knowledgeable about helping everyone out. So there's a lot of work on our side to make sure that we get that right. If you don't hear updates from us, don't think it's gone away. We're just, we're just hard at work on it. So
shop is fine for me. Some people in chat are saying that the shop is down. I don't know. It works
it
for me.
Might be regional.
Yeah, could be. Apparently, I should stop fiddling with the toaster.
you can hear it.
It's a little noisy, yeah.
But it's just so addicting to keep flipping it up and up.
That's, yeah. Guilt. So many prints. I'm sitting here fidgeting with this.
Yeah. Guilt is charged. All right, so...
I've had a couple of questions, oddly, about will we ever release a Delta printer? And that has been asked before when Joe was on the show.
Okay.
And Joe's not super excited about doing
that. I mean, I guess never say never, but right now I don't really see reason to do it. But yeah.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of things to do on the Cartesian side still before we get bored with it. So
one last thing, I guess, Prusa Connect for Mark III. Yeah, Prusa Connect is very similar story to Prusa Technicians. It's definitely happening. It's like internally a lot of progress, but not quite yet ready, but I would say pretty soon probably.
Yeah. For the Mark III, you'll definitely need extra hardware though, because you'll need a Raspberry Pi or something else like that, because
it will be pretty easy.
Oh yeah, for sure. But just saying, it's not going to be a plug-in like Prusa Connect on the Mini will be, because there's no network interface on the Mark III. So okay, well, that is our show. Thank you everyone for joining us. Sven, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. That's been fun.
It's been a great time, and we will see you guys all later. Stay safe, keep printing, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye guys.
Bye.
See ya.